WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are always out promoting the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by our friends at the Maryland Lottery, letting ourselves play here this week, along with our friends at Goodwill Industries. Fadley's is the crab cake of choice this week on Wednesday morning. Be joined by longtime journalist and my pal and one-time colleague, Dan Rodericks. Now we just fly fish together. Also, Tharu Vignaraja will be with us, as well as Attorney General Brian Frosch, as we talk about all sorts of things, political and legal and otherwise. So I got a lot of friends in baseball with a last name like Aparicio, and I can honestly say I don't know that I've had more than a handful of umpires on all of these years. I sort of confided in Rob Nyer the last time he came on as the writer of writings, and I'm like, you know, I didn't mess with the umpires much. I mean, all the years I had a press pass before Angelos threw me out in 06, 21 years of having a media pass, the umpires had a little place behind home plate. You know, Tyler would rub up the Delaware mud and hand it off and all that stuff. So anytime I get an umpire on, calling balls and strikes, it's good. But Rob Nyer, I said, hey, Rob, what are you doing? He said, I'm writing a book. I said, on who? He said, Dale Scott. I said, I know that little bit about the Dale Scott story. That's an interesting story. He said, well, when the book comes out, I'm going to get Dale on the show. And lo and behold, Dale Scott. Dale, when I hear your name, I don't hear Dale Scott, anything about sexuality or umpiring or what base you're on. I hear your voice. I hear your name in the voice of Rex Barney. Because Rex was in the 80s. Man, you were really a young umpire. I mean, I checked your age, and I'm like, how can he – like, it feels to me like you must have been umpiring when you were like me, like a teenager, you know? But I hear Rex Barney saying, tonight's umpires at first base, Dale Scott. You know, like, I just hear that voice. How are you? It's good to have you on, my friend.
Well, it's great to be on. One of my favorite cities, Baltimore, and called a lot of games there, playoff games and everything. So, and the All-Star game, 93. So, you know, always happy to be back in Baltimore.
You were there when the Free Willy sign came on the – come on now. I know I get you to laugh at that, right?
I was there. I had the left field line. That night, that was
so you did not call the ball and strike when Kruk bailed out on Randy Johnson.
No, I tried not to laugh too hard, is what I was trying not to
do. Well, listen, I mean, this would have been a pretty sensitive topic back. I've been on the air 31 years. If you would have come on the air in 1992 or 93 or 94 and told the story you're about to tell me, you know, I'll admit something here. I don't know that I've admitted this before. There was a media member 20 some years ago, still involved, so I'll leave him be. And everyone in my audience is familiar with him. Took a time to go through a team clubhouse telling the players that I might be gay, thinking it might disparage my career in some way at that time. So there was this code 25 years ago, and you know, Carl Nassib come, you know, 2 years ago, and other players of the modern era that, you know, I guess the first question I'd ask you, was there ever a point in your life where you thought you'd be able to come on radio shows and have books and tell this story? Because I don't think anybody who was not in the position you're in can understand the journey you've been through.
Well, no, I mean, you know, it was funny in 2018, which was the year I officially retired. Billy Bean in the Major League Baseball, you know, offices, and who came out after he retired as a player. We are on the float, the first time the Major League Baseball had a float in the Gay Pride Parade in New York. And we're going down Fifth Avenue or wherever we were at. And I looked at Billy and I said, could you in your wildest dreams believe that you and I would be standing on a Major League Baseball float in the Gay Pride Parade? He said, not a chance, not a chance. I mean, that was an impossible dream when I was starting out. And for the first many years of my career, things have gone full circle. And we know, you know, as we'll talk about that whole story. But to answer your question, I would have been shocked. I would have laughed, actually, if somebody had suggested that was going to happen.
That you would live long enough and society could change, you know, at the rate that it did. Because I would think, and well, again, I've read books. I just saw Styx the other night, right? Chuck Panazzo's become a friend of mine through the course of years. And I, you know, I was down at Jay Wise, a great friend of mine. And I read his book, a listener, a guy I played Little League baseball with, gave it to me as a gift years, you know, 10, 15 years ago, about what it was like to be in a band. And if it ever got out, it could wreck the whole band. You could wreck the band in 1978, right? I would think you trying to get into what was a very difficult job, very, very, you know, macho, all of that in a bag of donuts. Baseball, very old, very white, very so conservative. It took him 50 years to get a designated hitter. Finally, right? That the secret you live with for a long period of your life that you probably held. There probably weren't many people who knew in your world. I can't, because we all have a secret, you know, and whether it could be known or not, what you live with, I just have so much respect for you and anyone in your position.
Well, you know, it's definitely a double life. And, you would say that live long enough for society to get there, live long enough for baseball to get there, live long enough for athletics, especially male athletics, to get there. Now we've seen it. We've seen it in football and basketball and soccer. We still haven't had a Major League Baseball player come out, and that'll happen. I was the first active official in the five major sports to come out when I did in 2014. But there was a long period from when I got into baseball in 1981 in the minor leagues, 1986 in the big leagues, and to where we could be talking about it now. You got to remember, my first professional baseball game in the Northwest League in 1981 was 2 weeks after a mysterious cancer and disease was affecting young men in San Francisco and New York. It was the AIDS epidemic, the start of it. And so my career paralleled that. It's when I was in the minor leagues and starting out in the big leagues in 86, the fact not only that if they found out I was gay, that would probably, when I was in the minor leagues, prevent me from moving up, or at least I certainly thought that. But not only that, but with the HIV epidemic happening, there would be guys who wouldn't want to even work with me. They wouldn't want to share a locker room with me or these road trips and sharing hotel rooms, because people were scared. They were scared of what they didn't know what this was.
Well, everybody remembers where they were the night of Magic Johnson, right? I mean, yeah, that'd be a seminal moment in your life, right?
Right. Absolutely. I was in Phoenix. I was I think it was the day before a Oregon Duck Arizona State football game. but yeah, things have changed dramatically since when I first got in. I talk about it in the book because I did have a double life. The thing was, is I didn't, you know, I lived in Portland, Oregon, in my first year in the big leagues. I was in Eugene. That's where I grew up, and that's where I was in the minor leagues where I lived. And so I didn't work in a city that I lived in. I wasn't a closeted gay man. I was a closeted gay man in my baseball world. And when I was home, I was me. And but I
acted. That must have felt good. I'm just serious. I mean, any place you can go that's your safe harbor, whatever the thing that you don't want anybody to know for whatever reason, that's a beautiful thing when you can be you.
Well, for example, when I was in the California League, we had a couple of days off the All-Star game. Tim Cheetah was my partner, and we both got hired in the America League the same day. But I said I was going to go visit a cousin in L.A. or San Francisco or something. You know, I just got away for 2 days so I could just be me and breathe and not have this shield of who I wasn't, in my baseball life. So it was. You know, I was juggling things and I don't know if this is good or bad, but I became pretty good at it.
to be to survive. Like that's part of right.
You do. And it's a shame that it's that way and still is for a lot of people. But I also, I just knew reality. You know, when I came out when I was 19, when I figured it all out and, for me, and this is before I got into baseball, when I figured it out, I said, okay, what are you going to do about it? Now I know who I am. What are you going to do about it? And one thing I said I would not do is lie to myself every day or bring someone into a relationship, a female for a beard, in a lie, basically. I just would not do that. And I realized I'd have to play the game, as I state, or I call it, I would have to play the game with society and with, I may have
to. You thought forever. At that time, right?
I mean, basically, and I had my circle of friends and people, that I was, that were also gay or some straight people that knew, but basically, I have to play the game. I've got to play what society is acceptable right now and this and that. And thankfully things have changed quite a bit since then.
When you say play the game back, and how many people really knew? I mean, who could you have trusted in the circle It certainly didn't know the players that well. I mean, the umpires didn't drink with the player. I mean, like, no. I was a part of the baseball life. I was on the road in the 90s with teams and players in the Johnny Oates era. And you and I were in the same room and stadium and clubhouses right. and like all that, all Camden Yards, all of that. Right. We were both right. at the 93 All-Star game. I can, I can pin us both there. But I would just say in that world, as I began this conversation saying there was someone trying to really do damage to me by accusing me of that, because that in that world, maybe one of the worst things you could be 25 right. years ago, that this would have swayed my ability to do my job and in accusations. And so where were you at this point in being able to trust anybody at that point in your life?
I got hired in 1986. It wasn't until 98 or 99 that a couple guys individually, this wasn't some premeditated thing, but you know, just in conversation, Darryl Cousins was the first guy, American League umpire. And he
another name that I hear in Rex Barney's voice, by the way.
There you go.
Exactly. Say them all to me. Give me all your colleagues from the 80s. I hear them in Rex's voice.
Yeah, it reminds me. But, you know, Darryl just, we were at spring training and having a beer, and there's some other people around, but it was just him and I kind of over on the side. And out of nowhere, he said, "Hey, Dale, I just want to let you know that I know you have a little bit different lifestyle than most of us, but I just want you to know I would walk on the field with you any day. You're a great guy. You're a great umpire. And I just want you to know that." Well, you know, immediately my defenses went up because I was so used to, you know, I said, "Thanks, Darryl. I appreciate that." And just kind of let it go. But in my mind,
what do you mean? Right. Like literally. Yeah.
I didn't really challenge him, but I didn't affirm what he said. I just said, "Hey,
were you fearful? Are you scared that he knew or did somebody knew?"
No, it actually, you know, at first, you know, because I was so used to having these shields up, but that's my go-to, my default, but As I thought to myself, as you know, that later that evening or whatever, I thought, you know what, that's good. You know, he's telling me that it's okay. You know, and Rick Reed did the same thing. There's another name. Rick Reed did the same thing. That
just
same
don't
spring.
Say Nestor Shylock because I met him once.
I never met Nestor. I never. But anyway, so that's when things started to break up a little bit, and my true identity was, and I found out later. I guess I wasn't as great of an actor as I thought I was, because a lot of guys had figured it out years previous, but they didn't bring it up to me because, you know, it's you don't want to be wrong. You know, hey, I think you're gay or you're not. Oh, sorry. but that's what started. And so, if I, you know, between about 98, 99, and then, you know, we combined leagues as far as the umpire staffs. In 2000, I was a crew chief by the end of 2001, and then things really opened up.
Dale Scott is our guest. I should now say the book is out. I've had Rob Nyer on talking about the book. The Umpire is out, Calling the Game and Living My True Self. Dale Scott with Rob Nyer, and a foreword by Billy Bean, the aforementioned. In 14, you say you come out, you're still on the field. And obviously, and I should promote right now, June 22nd, the Orioles are celebrating a Pride night in the middle of Pride week. My wife and I have been a part of Pride parades and all sorts of things over the course of time, you know, over the last 20 years in regard to all of helping people, in having friends like you all of my life living in this way. That in 2014, I'm sure everywhere you went afterward, people were coming up to you saying, "I was you. I was. How do I do that?" That there really is in the modern era for people your age to that there's a leadership aspect of this that maybe you never saw coming. That the minute it happened, it probably not only for you a cleansing of a lot of ways, but probably really the last 10 years of your life probably been interesting. Last 8 years of your life, but in a way that you probably could have never have thought about it.
Absolutely. The unbelievable positive response to when I came out. I came out in December of 2014, so it wasn't during the baseball season. But I got over 200 plus emails after I came out. All of them very positive, but you know, from all walks of life, not only officials in football, basketball, baseball, you know, rugby, soccer, police, fire, doctors, nurses, just, you know, all sorts of, and from all over the world. And a lot of it was either I'm gay, I'm in the closet, I'm one step closer to stepping out of it because of your story, but I'm not quite there yet. Or you've given me the courage to come out to my other umpires in my association or something. I remember a father from Toronto said, I'm proud of your courageous decision to do this. He goes, I hope this helps my two daughters as they grow up in a world where this doesn't, you know, someday this won't even be a story. Thank you for doing that. The one that I write about in the book and I've talked about before is a high school senior in the LA area who umpired baseball, who had a goal to be a major league umpire, and he was gay in the closet. He wrote me and he said, "Now I know that I may not make it to the big leagues because I don't have the talent, but it's not because of who I am." And that to me was gold. I mean, that to me personified the whole thing of why.
Biggest fear of the 19-year-old version of you, right? Literally.
Right. And he now had somebody to look up to. To say, you know what, before I came out, he said, "I want to be a major league umpire, and there's no way I'll be that because I'm gay. Though there's no way that'll happen." Now he sees me and he says, "I still may not make it there, but I know it's not because of who I am." And that's just makes everything worth it. Not that I second guess it at all, but it makes everything worth it.
Hey, Dale, you're going to be coming in. You mentioned about riding the float with Billy Beane in New York, and it started New York and San Francisco, you know, places where you probably had a more normal road trip there to be able to go out and get lost and be, you right. know, as opposed to Milwaukee or Baltimore or other places that were a little bit more provincial and closed in. The why I have is when you decide in December, almost a decade ago now, out of season, give me the orchestration or the mindset, because probably for years when it became a little more comfortable, you knew there might come a point where you're like, I don't care. I don't care. Who knows?
Yeah.
That probably happened. And then you have to make a decision to let everyone know. Give me that time frame in your life going into 14.
Well, you know, like I said, in late 90s and by the 2000s, the league knew. I mean, the people that signed my checks, the people I worked for knew. The umpire staff knew. So this was not a big shock when
players
I came out.
Players talked? Was it them. That at that point?
You know, I never heard anything from players or any rumors that players thought that or whatever. It was more in-house type of thing. But when I, you know, coming out, the media didn't know, the fans didn't know, the teams didn't know. And so that was news to them. But the orchestration, so to speak, the year before, Michael, my husband now, we met after my first year in the big leagues in 86. So we'd been together at this point 27 years or something. We legally got married in November of 2013. So now we fast forward to September of 2014. Referee Magazine did a story about my career. Peter Jackal wrote it, did a great job. He interviewed, you know, people that I went to high school with, my first umpire commissioner when I was 15, when I started in Eugene, the radio, I worked radio for 5.5 years, my old, program director, all these people. So it was a great article, and it was about my career, but they asked for some pictures and I said, I told Mike, I said, "I want to send this picture of you and I on our way to Australia when MLB opened up there. In 2014 with the Dodgers and Diamondbacks, I said, I want to send this picture and with the caption, Dale Scott with longtime companion, Michael Rausch." That's opening up this box that's, you know, that you can't close. I said, "You know, I want to do this. Is that okay with you?" And he laughed. He goes, "You're the one who's got to deal with this, not me." So yeah, it's fine. You know, so I did that. And the reason I did it is because we'd been married almost a year now. All the people that helped make that possible, you know, to make marriage equality legal, and other things in the gay world, I felt hypocritical not being out myself. I was obviously very established in baseball, so I thought, you know what, I'm just going to do it. Well, the Referee Magazine comes out. It's an in-house magazine, meaning that you can't buy it in the newsstand. It's subscription only, and it was crickets. Nobody really saw it except one guy. A D1 football official who's gay, he alerted outsports.com. They contacted me. They did an interview and a story. It dropped on December 2nd. And I got outed by out. But it was a relief. And kind of what you said in your question, at that point, I got to the point where I don't know what the reaction is going to be when the season starts in 2015 in a few months. But I do know that if somebody, I had gotten to the point that if somebody has an issue with me being gay or you know, homosexuality in general, it's kind of their issue. It's not mine. I'm happy with who I am. I know who I am. I have a great life. And I was able to finally get to the point where, guess what? If you've got a problem with it, I'm sorry. I'll answer questions if you want, if you like to, but that's not my problem. It's yours.
Dale Scott, well spoken, and I still hear umpire Dale Scott in the voice of Rex Barney in my ears. That's the Baltimore kid in me, Dale. You know, all of this aside from, let's talk a little bit of baseball here, and we'll sell the book and talk about the game itself and all the issues. I did 90 days of lockout here, and you know, baseball has become a little less desirable here in Baltimore over the last 30 years, if you
tough.
Can imagine.
It's been tough,
yeah. Yeah. You know, I was the one that led the walkout on Angelos. I hope that you were umpiring that day against the Detroit Tigers back in 06. One of the proudest moments of mine. Talk about Pride Day. My Pride Day was back in 06 when I stood up and said, this is no good. And here we are 16 years later in a, which should be a baseball city that's really struggled. The sport itself. I mean, I'm Aparicio, man. I come off the boat honest right. with all of this. It's really hard to watch, and not just because the Orioles lose, but just the changes in the game. And I would think through all of this, you being on the field for most of this, you only left the game a couple years ago, right. that you sense the difference in pace of play and analytics and what managers are trying to do and general managers sort of sitting on the bench in the mind of the managers. I've spent time with people you know well in baseball that I still keep a lot of friendships in baseball. I had a friend of mine that managed in the game, played the game, manage the game, coach the game. And I had lunch with him maybe 3-4 years ago. And we went down to Amici's and we sat for 3-4 hours down in Little Italy. I know you probably were Sabatino's guy.
Sabatino's,
That's where they took all you guys down there. I know. But I was up the street at Amici's. Nothing wrong with Sabs. I love me a bookmaker. No problem with that. You can have a bookmaker now in baseball. You can bet on all you want. Not the umpires, of
course.
That's
a big change.
But the bookmaker salad, only bookmaker you were allowed to have back in the day.
That's right.
I sat down there and he said, you know, I've been in a game my whole life. And he said, I got to leave. It's 2:00. I'm like, why the hell you got to get to the ballpark at 2:00? I mean, Davey'd roll in around 4:30 back when he was managing the team. And he said, you have no idea. We sit here and do nothing but go through like data so that in the seventh inning, if a left-hander comes in and we've got 13 pitches and this pitcher and who's available and who can buck hide at some hotel around the corner and we can add him onto the roster, like the pitching part of this and the game's changed. Burl Weaver wouldn't recognize this, right?
No. I mean, it's changed a lot. And I did see a lot of the change. And is it a better game? I don't know. I mean, when basically you have strikeouts or home runs, when basically you've got you know, hardly any action. Basically, you know, it's not good for anybody. The fans don't like it, obviously. It's not a lot of fun to watch just pitches and strikeouts and every once in a while home run or whatever. But it's also, you know, the infielders are back on their heels. There's no balls are getting, you know, put into play. It's just it's in this modern era where everything's on the phone, you know, for especially the, you know, the younger generations.
I taught my wife how to teach box scores back in 03. We got married.
Right,
I caught
her
one time at Camden Yards keeping score on her shoe because she didn't have any paper. And now, like, You can't.
Right.
It's over with. It's on the scoreboard, dude. It's on your phone.
And you know, that's out now. I mean, we were not going to stop that, but what we can do, or what I would hope baseball can do, is figure out, if they got data on everything else, if they can figure out how to tweak the game a little bit to get some more action. You get ground balls and hit and runs and steal plays and, you know, moving the runner over and just things that made baseball what it was.
Well, you got to teach him how to move the runner over. There's no launch angle in that deal.
Well, moving the runner over means if I hit it over the fence, he'll move.
He'll go over.
So, and as umpires, I mean, just selfishly as umpires, we love it when they're swinging the bat, because when they swing the bat, that's one less decision I got to make as a plate umpire, right? And it also, you know, gets the game moving. We're not paid by the hour out there.
Dale Scott is here. The book is out. He is out. And Rob Nyer, I appreciate Rob for putting this together and giving us a great guest here. You can certainly go check out the book. And obviously the game itself, and I guess to bring it a full circle to the beginning of this and the stigma and all that, I can't imagine in the 1980s and 90s how many gay slurs you heard in locker rooms, because I heard plenty of them, just being around and being a part of that and being in that environment. The game has changed. People have changed, younger players, younger people. For that, I would say for your young friend in Los Angeles to maybe one day being an umpire, certainly society's changed in all of that, right? And for moving forward, there'll never be any of that again. But, you know, I'm sure a lot of that pain's hard to unbury to some degree, right?
Yeah, you know, I've got an umpire or an official's mind, right? It's not a lot of nuance. It's, you know, black or white. You're out or safe. I don't have a lot of time to think, well, the throw is good, but he runs fast and that kind of, you know, I mean,
but
I
life does work the corners now, you know that, right?
Exactly. So, you know, I again, part of my two lives, I was able to compartmentalize that kind of stuff. Yeah, I heard stuff sometimes in the locker room that were hurtful.
That doesn't go on anymore. I mean, I heard it about women reporters like 30 years ago. Right. Again, we're talking about a long time ago. That's not going to fly anymore anywhere, I don't think.
No, and you know, sometimes I think that maybe that pendulum goes a little too far where the politically correct is too far or whatever, but there's a lot of good of what that is. And part of that is not to, you know, not using certain words and not saying certain things that can be very hurtful or degrading to a group of people, or, you know, and so that, you know, that's good. Quick story. I was working the playoffs, Greg Gibson, who I rarely worked with, but he was on the crew, and he was telling a story before a game in Tampa, and, you know, just telling a funny story, blah, blah, blah. And at the end, you know, we're all laughing. He goes, isn't that gay? And then he immediately looked at me and goes, I am so sorry. I did that. I should not have said that. You know, he caught himself. And I said, Greg, you know what? If you had said that and just didn't even know what you had said, that's one thing. You caught it. You said, you immediately said, hey, you know, I'm sorry. I didn't, you know, that wasn't right. That's half the battle, is when people understand that, you know, this can be hurtful. So let's move. I'm not offended. It's a teaching moment or a learning moment right here. And it was actually a really kind of a cool moment for both of us, for him to you know, and so that's what's happening now. I think people are much more in tune a little bit as to you know, what they say, frankly. And again, I don't want it to be so far where you can't, you know, I mean, comedy is comedy, or I mean, whatever, but you got to understand that, you know, it may not seem as it is, you know, not everybody there is straight, you know, possibly. So that was a moment that I write about, and that was a moment for, you know, progress, I think.
Well, certainly in the case of teams having a night, June 22nd, you're going to be in town, right, as part of what the Orioles are doing that night. So I guess full circle is there is a point where there's a celebration and a night, right, in most ballparks. I don't know if every team does it. I think most do.
Most do, yeah.
But yeah, where you can come in and be a part of this and tell your story, maybe sell your book a little bit too, but maybe help someone, maybe help a kid somewhere, you know?
Right. Exactly. That's exactly right. And it, you know, I've had people say, well, why don't we have straight nights? Well, straight nights every night. Okay. So we're just trying to carve out one night. Okay.
One out of 81. Hey, I hope to see you in Baltimore. I'd love to have you back on talking some baseball. I don't know where Absolutely. The Orioles will be in last place, but I'm pretty sure they'll be in last place by the time you get here. I've seen their pitching, Dale. You don't have to umpire it anymore, so we can talk about it.
Okay, very good.
Hey, I appreciate it. Thanks for coming on, and thanks
for
giving me a great memory about Rex Barney, because anytime I can hear somebody's name and his voice, it gives me some good old thoughts about my childhood.
Somebody give that guy a contract.
That man a contract. There you go, 1980s. You go back to Wild Bill, don't you? Memorial Stadium, you got it all.
Yeah. I worked the last series of Memorial Stadium.
Mike Flanagan, 1991, man.
Yeah, I had first base. I ended in a double play. Cal Ripken ended in a double play, bottom of the ninth.
Not that you remember everything that ever happened on a baseball.
Yeah, I've had concussions. You know, I sometimes I can't. But
I appreciate you, Dale Scott. The book is out. Rob Nyer wrote it. You can go read it. The Umpire Is Out: Calling the Game and Living My True Self. Dale Scott with Rob Nyer and Billy Bean. And June 22nd is LGBTQ Night at Oriole Park at Camden Yards, and they're playing the Nationals. So it's a good little national rivalry. Go beat up on them. If Angelos isn't going to pay the bill, just go down there and give him some more money. Dale, I appreciate you, brother. Take care.
You take care. Thanks.
Dale Scott, great visitor joining us here from out in the desert. I am Nestor. We are WNSD AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.